You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Whether it's fair or not, New Yorkers have a reputation for being complainers, and it could be about overcrowded subways or ambulance sirens that disturb our sleep. The city provides its residents with lots of reasons to grumble, and it always has. Matthew Backham has collected 132 letters of complaint written to the various mayors of New York from 1751 to 1969, and the result is a book called New York City Museum of Complaint, which includes letters from common citizens who can't stand street musicians to the worries of power players like David Rockefeller. Some of the notes are neatly written in pen, some are typed, some are simply scrawled. The book is published by Steidl Miles, and I'm very pleased that it brings Matthew Backham to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
In your introduction, you write, complaint is an essential element of civic discourse and helps to regulate and define it. Really?
Well, it appears to me, you know, living in a city like New York, one often wonders, how does this all happen? And clearly, people expressing their opinions about how it should or should not be is a major part of that.
Is there an art to writing a good letter of complaint?
Well, there are examples in the book, and some seem to be effective, some seem to be perhaps misguided. But, you know, there's a certain style, a certain manner of delivery or etiquette, I suppose.
And you say some are more effective. I don't know whether you mean they actually got results or whether they just might spur somebody to action, whereas another one might just be thrown in the garbage pail.
Well, you know, the thing about the letters in this collection are that we don't necessarily know the results of the letters. They simply are correspondence to the mayor. So it's in terms of follow-up or what actually came about because of the letter, it's kind of unknown. But in reading them, in reviewing them, it seems obvious that some move you as a reader, and one would hope the mayor felt the same way.
And you've called this book The Museum of Complaint. It's presented as an art book. You're an artist.
I am.
Wasn't the earliest version of this a small booklet you handed out for free in city parks and art galleries?
That's true. It started out as a public art project.
Do you work often with archival materials?
I try to do my best. It's one of my areas of interest, and, you know, it seems like fantastic material.
Well, how did you hear about the city's collection of complaint letters?
I was able to, you know, do some research at the Municipal Archives, and, you know, they're wonderful people there. They gave me some access to the collection, as they do for researchers of all stripes.
So if I get in touch with them, I'd be able to go through this collection?
Depending on your question, I mean, they'll definitely have answers, and, you know, they're in the business of providing information to New Yorkers.
Well, I'm assuming there are a lot more than 132 letters in the archive.
Much more,
How
actually.
Many did you go through?
It's hard to actually estimate. Thousands and thousands.
And did people point to certain ones and say, you really got to read this one, Matthew?
I actually had some help. You know, the archivists, of course, know about the archive more than anyone else. And there was some guidance, but a lot of it was discovery. I mean, it was just a matter of kind of plowing through the material.
Why did you give the book the title New York City Museum of Complaint?
You know, it was an interesting kind of challenge to find a parameter or a way to address this issue, and that somehow came to me, and it ended up being the title.
What kind of response did you get from the people who saw that original, more modest booklet?
People seem curious. You know, New Yorkers love free newspapers, and they love newspapers in general, and that's how it started out. So that kind of sparked interest, and it went from there.
Steve Allen used to do a feature on his television show in which he'd read letters to the Daily News, and he'd read them all in this very angry voice. I'm outraged that... And you could read some of these letters like that.
Of course, no. It's fundamentally a project about the voice. And, you know, you can kind of hear echoes. I mean, it's printed on pages, but the voice is still there. And there's something special about how a letter contains that.
And you begin with a letter from 1751 or 52. We're not sure?
It's noted on the letter. It's not totally clear. I mean, the information is all there. Fundamentally, they're all images, so...
Is this the first year that the city began saving letters?
It's not the first year they began saving them, but it's the first one that seemed to make sense for this particular collection.
Well, it's interesting that's even before the United States became independent.
Well, you know, I mean, the history of complaint is part of the history of the United States, ultimately.
Well, I guess it's the reason we had that revolution. And the handwriting is really intricate in these early letters. Did you select any just based on the beauty of the writing?
Well, they all had to like kind of qualify somehow to be around the issue of complaint. But, you know, the aesthetics are a major part of the project. And those, especially those early ones, these were specialists who made these things, you know, at that time. Not everybody could write like that. And there were, you know, people who were particularly employed as scribes.
Oh, really? People would say, I want to write a letter to the mayor, and they'd go to a scribe and have them compose something for them?
Well, as far as I understand, that's how it worked. You know, it was more of an artisan's role to actually be, you know, inscribing, you know, ink on paper.
Is that why that first letter, which is dated February 25th, 1751 or 52, is written in the third person?
It might be. I mean, again, you know, the exact details around each particular letter are not necessarily known, but what's there on the page is persuasive.
Well, it's addressed to Edward Holland Esquire, mayor of the city of New York, by a man named Andrew Ramsey, who writes that for almost these 2 months past has not received as much money by the ferry as would support my servants. May it therefore please your honor and the corporation to consider my sundry losses and grant petition something toward his support.
It's old English. It's harder to understand exactly what he means, but apparently it's a kind of, you know, a entreaty to the mayor. In the same way, you know, complaint evolves over the course of time. That's one of the things about the project that I'm particularly interested in.
He calls himself a humble petitioner.
Indeed. That's all you could do at that time. Apparently.
And he's asking the city to give him some money. He's been running a ferry?
Apparently he ran a ferry, you know, between, you know, Brooklyn and it was not even necessarily Brooklyn at that time. I mean, he ran boats.
Are there many letters asking the city for money?
Well, you know, the correspondence to the mayor, of course, is full of people who are interested in advancing their particular situations, as you might imagine.
And then in June 1797, a letter was written from residents living in the city's 6th Ward complaining about a pond. Why did this group feel the need to contact the city about a pond?
Well, at that time, there were at least a few more ponds than now in the city of New York, and they actually they became a bit, as the letter describes, bespoiled by development. And I think that in this particular case, they were interested in having it filled in.
This is the sort of thing that somebody might write today about Newtown Creek or the Gowanus Canal.
It's quite possible, although I don't think you could fill in the Gowanus Canal, but hopefully not, at least.
Yeah, but in this case, the pond is being filled with dead animals. It's also next to a glue factory. That does sound like an earlier version of some of the things we've seen since.
Well, step by step, New York evolves, and, you know, the past reveals a lot of what continues to happen here.
My guest, Matthew Bakum, B-A-K-K-O-M, has put together a book of 132 letters of complaint written to the mayors of New York from 1751 to 1969 under the title New York City Museum of Complaint. It's published by Steidl & Miles, and a very beautiful book in which we really do get a sense of what these letters look like. We talked about handwriting and how they reveal personality. Then along come typewriters around 1870, and the letters lose some of that personality.
Well, they might lose some of the gesture of the hand, but they gain a whole different kind of a momentum, and that's through design. I mean, stationery and the fonts and the typewriters themselves have personality.
Did you notice any changes in the content of the letters when writers began typing rather than writing it out by hand?
Well, I think the typewriter was a great democratizing instrument, and you see a kind of an availability of address, a formal address that wasn't necessarily there when you had to find somebody who could actually write in a kind of presentable way.
And typing allows you to write longer letters, usually.
Of course, and more emphatic, perhaps.
Noise is something many New Yorkers complain about now, but you found a letter written in 1889 about street musicians. The mayor at the time was Hugh J. Grant. The letter is basically asking him to get rid of the city street players. A man named Dean E. Rosenheim writes, "Why must people be compelled to listen to the miserable music and discord produced by these bands of half-grown boys? And not only is one compelled to listen to them, but to cap the climax, these fellows have the impudence to ring doorbells expecting remuneration for their vile music." Now, pretty much that letter could have been written today by somebody, right? A subway rider?
Quite possibly. I mean, you know, street musicians are an issue of longstanding interest in the city, and in this particular case, I think as far as I understand, it had to do with the German bands, which, you know, were very well organized groups. I mean, we may have individuals now, and you know, they're out there doing their thing, but at that time it was groups of young men, apparently.
Well, this person uses very heavily weighted words like vile and impudence, etc. Did you find that most of the people were generally polite and seemingly educated in the letters? Once we got past the scribes?
I think it runs the gamut. I mean, people really are expressing themselves, and sometimes in very forceful ways. It isn't necessarily always with kid gloves, so to speak. Some people are really quite upset, and it's expressed in the letters. It's the voice. So there's a full range, as you might expect.
In March 1930, the ACLU wrote to Mayor James J. Walker, Jimmy Walker, in regard to a parade of the unemployed. What were they asking the mayor?
Well, I think they probably wanted some attention.
They wanted him to pay attention to the fact that there were a lot of unemployed. It was the beginning of the Depression.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of these letters are based on a kind of a desire for attention. And in this particular case, that particular letter, for example, from the ACLU, it seems like a foundational document. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we understand the ACLU as being now comes from someplace, and it was in representing people who didn't feel that they had a direct voice.
Now, some of these letters are written by out-of-towners. What are those letters like?
Well, I mean, New York has long been an international place. People who don't necessarily live here have opinions about what should or should not happen.
Well, there's an interesting one from Mrs. Dorothy B. McLean of Montgomery, Alabama, in 1964. The first sentence, written in all caps, is, "Race riots in New York." What was she complaining about?
Well, she seemed to harbor some feelings about how Birmingham, her city, had been represented in the past, and she felt that the mayor should have her sympathy, apparently. The letter continues to say that, like, kind of don't worry about it. Like, or, you know, it's the North-South issue, which, you know, comes up again and again in American history.
She's basically saying that New York had all the problems that they felt that they were overcoming by keeping the South segregated.
Well, she was representing a certain position in that moment, and you know, it's a complicated time.
What did David Rockefeller write to the mayor about?
He appeared to be writing to the mayor about the Cross Manhattan Expressway and the unfortunate aspect of it not occurring.
Not occurring. He was supporting Robert Moses and the plan.
He doesn't mention Robert Moses in the letter, but it would appear that the big issue that he's on about is that.
The letters end in the 60s, so I assume you were or didn't even try to track down some of the writers of these more recent letters.
The more recent ones, it wasn't necessarily a matter of trying to track them down or not. I was trying to present them all kind of equally in a way.
And you end in 1969 for any specific reason?
It seemed like a natural break.
Well, today, of course, it would be different because you'd have to find transcripts of calls to 311, wouldn't you?
Apparently. I mean, you know, that how the complaints of New Yorkers are recorded and archived for the future now is different than the past, obviously. And writing a letter is probably the most effective way to register yourself for the future. But if one was to do it at the moment, yeah, I think it'd be 311 and emails, I suppose.
My staff wants to know if you've ever written any letters of complaint.
Not to the mayor of the city of New York.
Well, I wish you'd stop writing those letters of complaint to WNYC. We're doing the best we can.
Indeed.
My great thanks to Matthew Backham for being on our show today to talk about this book, which contains some gorgeous letters, beautiful facsimiles. The cover itself with the word city misspelled for a moment. Somebody caught it and typed over the letter. It is published by Seidel Miles, and I want to thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Leonard.